Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. It's a bone-chilling 20-degree night in Washington Heights in New York City. I'm in the crypt of a church surrounded by candlelight. There's a piano in the center of the space. Pianist Dan Tepfer is walking towards it. He sits down and starts playing. This is Johann Sebastian Bach's Invention in C Major, one of 15 pieces the composer wrote in order to teach his son the fundamentals of piano and composition. If you've ever learned classical piano, you probably tried one of these pieces. They're some of the most popular piano works ever. But that night, Dan Tepfer didn't just play Bach's Inventions. This was the launch of his album, Inventions Reinventions, where he also played his own free improvisations responding to the Bach. Flights of creative expression that took this centuries-old music and made it sound brand new. Dan Tepfer is an acclaimed jazz pianist who has performed with such luminaries as Lee Konitz and Pharoah Sanders, and after his performance, I knew I had to speak with Dan to understand how he uses these ancient harmonies to inspire his 21st century craft. There's a lot of musical detail in our conversation, but I believe even if you don't understand every term, you'll come away from Dan's approach with a new appreciation for the mind of a concert pianist. Because classical music isn't just notes on a page. It's a living language unto itself, and it still has much to tell us. And Bach's Inventions, for Dan, they're not just technically perfect pieces of composition. They tell a story. The story of the hero's journey.
I'm Dan Tepfer. I'm a pianist, composer, and actually sometimes coder. And I have a new record called Inventions, Reinventions on Story Sound Records.
Take me to the start of this project. Why did you want to work with Bach and his inventions?
The genesis of this project really lies in my fascination with free improvisation. I absolutely love the idea of being able to sit down and make up music from nothing. That's something I've just loved since I was a kid. But there was always something frustrating to me about doing free improvisation, which is that I was just following my nose from one point to another. And I think in music that is satisfying, there's an overarching unity to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And for me, there was this frustration with free improvisation where I would just kind of be on this journey from one moment to the next. Instead of being, you know, like Bach, where there's this, it's like a tree-like structure where there's a central unity to it all, you know? I put out this record in 2011 called Goldberg Variations, Variations, where I play the Goldberg Variations, all 30 of them, by Bach. After each one, I improvise a variation in response. And playing that project led me to dive way deeper into Bach than I ever had before, even though I'd been playing Bach since I was a kid, because I just realized I didn't understand how it worked well enough. So I started taking harmony and counterpoint lessons again, as you know, as an adult. I'd done a little bit of this in college, but it was very superficial.
Yeah.
And suddenly this understanding of what Bach was doing opened up for me. And one of the things that I took kind of as a test to see if I really did understand the mechanisms behind his work was to look at the inventions. I remember them as a kid being so fascinated with them and having this nagging question in my mind, which is like, okay, there are so few notes on the page. How come it sounds so deep? And then the immediate thing that came up for me as an improviser was like, wait a minute, maybe I can use those same ideas, which are essentially ideas about narrative form in music, in free improvisation. Maybe it would make sense. Maybe it would finally have that overarching unity that I wanted it to have.
What is that form? What is that storytelling structure?
So I like to think of it as directly relating to what we now call classical narrative structure. So classical narrative structure is just like this very abstract, basic way of telling a story. And the essential ingredients of classical narrative structure are, first of all, you need a protagonist. We will first encounter this protagonist at home in a place of safety. That's act one. Classical narrative structure has three acts.
Yep.
And then something happens. There's what we call an inciting event. Suddenly our protagonist is thrust into chaos, into the unknown.
Right.
And act two is the process of our protagonist trying to regain some form of safety and stability. And in that process, we'll often be faced with all kinds of obstacles. We'll maybe go on some kind of epic journey. And then typically, act three, we find our protagonist has resolved most of the tensions, if not all, and finds themselves back in a place of safety. And typically, they'll also be a bit transformed along the way.
Okay, so you have a background in free improvisation and jazz. You go to Bach, this music that you had started playing as a kid, and that many people, when they're learning classical piano, they'll begin with.
Yeah.
That this music has, in its simplicity, an incredible depth, bar by bar, note by note. But when you pull out, you see that there's this larger three-act structure, and it's a site of inspiration for improvisation.
Yes.
I think what would be helpful is to go into one of these inventions and hear how Bach builds that three-arc structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe, you know, one that's absolutely familiar to everyone is the C major.
Mm.
Oh, these actually have my notes on them from when I was a kid.
No way. Check
that out. Yeah, this is like my teacher's stuff from when I was 8 years old or something.
That's amazing.
I mean, I have such an affinity for the C major. I played that. It's probably one of the first, you know, serious pieces I ever played as a child. All right, so right away, we get a sense of what this is about. We've heard this melody. First of all, it's a nice melody. It's something that has character, something very recognizable. And then we realize it's being repeated all the time. Right? Repeated immediately in the left hand. This is act one because we are meeting our protagonist and we're also seeing them in different lights.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how it sounds down there. And that's how it sounds in the dominant, right?
Right. To extend your metaphor, it's kind of like we're seeing our character walk around their home. We see
exactly.
them in the bedroom, we see them in the living room, we see them in the kitchen. We've seen them three different ways, and they are five or six notes that can go and travel around.
Like they're three-dimensional.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's not just
three-dimensional
like a
character.
Cartoonish character. This is a character that has some depth, that has some personality, right?
Yeah.
And even before the beginning of Act Two, we actually get this remarkable added insight into what our character is because Bach suddenly turns our character upside down. Here's the third bar of the invention in C major. Okay, what's that? Okay, that's all same exact theme, but upside down.
Our character can do somersaults around the house.
Yeah, like, you know, it's still our same character, but it's doing something funny. And something else happens here, right? So fourth bar of this invention, an F sharp is introduced. Okay, mm-hmm. So we've gone from that F, which in conjunction with the B being in the mode really pulls hard to C major.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly our F is an F sharp.
Gone to the black keys.
We have one black key.
Right.
And which in conjunction with the C, this is what's called a tritone, really wants to resolve towards G now.
Mm.
Okay, so now Act Two begins. And Bach, by the way, does this so seamlessly. Like, it's nothing like, you know, a classic like pop modulation where you have like, you know, maybe you're in C. Right? It's nothing like that.
This is not Barry Manilow.
No, it's like with Bach, he modulates way before you even have noticed that he's modulated. Mm-hmm. Essentially, by the time that you realize, oh, we're in a different key, he has actually been thinking that he's in a different key, like 4 bars or 8 bars earlier.
Ah, it's foreshadowing in a 3-act structure.
Exactly. Foreshadowing. Exactly. So here we are in the 4th bar of the Invention in C major. Okay, so how good did that feel to resolve to G?
I'd feel like I ended up, I'm not at my house anymore, but I'm at like my neighbor's house or something. It's like, it's something familiar. I feel safe.
Exactly, right? It's safe, but it's like a degree of safety removed from C.
Right.
Which, like, this is the whole kind of point of this type of tonal storytelling, is that somewhere in the back of our memory, even though we now feel like it's felt great to resolve to G because of the foreshadowing.
Right. As Bach is moving between these different keys, he's modulating, but he's doing so very subtly, it feels like our character is going through changes, which is a great pun because we are literally going through chord changes. We are going to some of these darker places. We're introducing some of the accidentals, the sharp notes and the flat notes that don't belong to our key, and we're seeing our character in new light, go through conflict, get resolved for a moment, but actually there's another conflict. We're really trying to get through all of these conflict and all these changes so that we can eventually arrive back home.
You know, with the analogy with storytelling, maybe there's a series of events that felt like they needed to be resolved in a certain way. Like, our character got really upset with their mom and they needed to have some deep conversation, and they finally had it, and they got to a point that felt like it resolved those tensions. But there are still larger tensions in the story that have not yet been resolved. And that's how it feels to me. You resolve to G, but we're still not happy. There's still this lingering memory of you got to get back to C some point. This lingering question of how are we going to get back home is really important, and it's going to drive everything that happens from here. This is essentially, from here, it's going to be an exploration of the territory that's around us to see if we can find our way home. So here we are in bar 7 of this Invention in C major, and suddenly we have a re-exposition of the theme in a very clear way, even though actually the theme has been present pretty much every bar, either right side up or upside down. Here we have it really dramatically. Okay, so what happened there? We have our F natural back.
We've gone back to the wet keys.
Okay, incredibly dramatic moment there. We got a C sharp. So briefly, we were in something that felt kind of like home. Yeah. We were in the white keys, okay? But very, very brief. And all of a sudden, we have a new accidental introduced, the C sharp, that we haven't heard before. And not only do we have the C sharp, but then we get this B flat. And now we're actually somewhere else already. So very briefly, we are in D minor. That's what the B flat and the C sharp is telling us. Like, this is, you know, now it feels like,
right,
we're there.
But we can't end there. Like, we're thoroughly in the middle of our story, and this is a solemn moment.
It would be too super weird to end there, but the local gravity of where we are wants to resolve there. This is our temporary home base.
It's almost like a scene within the second act. It's like we've landed in the scene of D minor.
Exactly. It's like, you know, if you're on an epic journey, there has been a warrior that we had to defeat, and we've defeated the warrior, but we're still nowhere near home.
Yeah,
you know. And then suddenly, now we're in bar 12. Our chord starts as D minor. Okay, and by the way, the left hand here is playing the theme, but upside down. Okay, but suddenly we have a new accidental. We have a G sharp. So we have a G sharp, which is the most important one here, because in conjunction with the D, this really wants to resolve to A minor now. So here we are in A minor. And right away, Bach never lingers once you've arrived.
Yeah.
Never lingers. We're immediately onto the next thing, which feels like it leads us to D minor. And it does. Okay, that's D minor. And, you know, this melody seems so innocent, right? I mean, that's like, did we know that this character was capable of that? Did we know that this character was capable of feeling that pathos? I don't think we did. That's a revelation. We've just learned something new about our character. Then he does this, which doesn't feel like D minor at all. And so actually what's going on here is that we're already back in C. But we don't know it. We don't know it. We don't know it because we're not playing the chord C. But we're very much in the harmonic region of C because it's all white notes. And there, you know, subtly, he did resolve to C, right? But it didn't feel satisfying, right?
Right.
It felt like it's not the end of the story.
All right, so act three.
And this is a really cool thing that happens here. Even though he has just spent some time in C, it's like announcing, foreshadowing home, suddenly he's going to go to the four, to F major. Okay, so that's very much F major.
It's kind of like... it's the final boss. Like, you think you beat the you think you beat the final boss, but they actually get back up. You think you've arrived home. You've gone back to C major for a second, but no, we are going somewhere you didn't expect. And oh, don't worry, everything's gonna be fine at the end. Like that happens in every story structure. If it seems.
Absolutely, and I think that's just the perfect analogy. It's like, you know, in a spy movie, he thinks he's defeated the bad guy, and then the camera slowly pans over to the bad guy, and you see his finger twitching. You know. We're not quite done yet, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can feel that F, because it's that opposite gravity, you can just feel that we're getting there. And then suddenly, B natural is back. B flat for a second. Then finally, we resolve to C. And so he keeps us guessing until the last moment. But when we get there, there's absolutely no doubt in our minds that we're back home. And I would like to mention also that all of this is happening within, what, like 55 seconds? I mean, it's just, this is actually in some ways my favorite thing about the inventions is that there's this very profound process happening that could support literally novels or like major works. And Bach is showing how to do this in the most microscopic form possible, in the simplest form, you know. There's no pretension here, and yet the mechanisms are infinitely powerful.
Right, because we just have two notes sounding at any given time. Simple, short.
Incredibly short.
And this is something you're supposed to learn as a beginner pianist.
Exactly.
There's way more going on here in this practice music than just technical exercises. This has got the three-act structure, a way of thinking about composition, which you have been struggling with and contemplating as an improviser.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniels, Tennessee Honey, and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
We're back with Dan Tepfer. After going through Bach's invention in C major, I wanted to hear Dan's process of improvisation. So how do you go about applying his narrative arc into the world of improvisation?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, I would say that I'm never trying to apply his narrative arc specifically, right? Because it's like, it's more like I'm trying to apply this very, very abstract idea of what a narrative arc can be, but right. It's not going to be his.
Sure.
It's like in the same way that a Transformers movie in Hollywood, which totally follows this kind of three-act structure to the letter, is not following the same narrative arc as, you know, The Odyssey, which is also very much following this structure. But they both share the abstract notion of the structure. So for me, as an improviser, it wasn't good enough for me to say, okay, I'm going to develop a protagonist. Like, maybe I'll find a melody, you know, whatever. Like, it could be anything. It could be like, something I just made up. Sure. That's a character, right?
Yeah.
It's not good enough to just develop this character because I don't want to just be playing that over and over again. Something needs to happen to this character. And that thing that needs to happen to the character actually needs to be plausible. You know, we've all seen badly told stories where something happens, it just feels totally like it's out of the blue. Maybe you're watching sci-fi and something just feels like way too easy a shortcut. Right.
Right. You're what we call the Deus Ex Machina event, where all of a sudden the giant the super ship arrives at the last minute and saves everybody who couldn't be saved.
Totally. We hate that.
It's the worst.
You know, part of what makes Star Wars great is that they somehow made the whole world of Star Wars somehow make some form of sense.
Right. They find the secret plans that reveal the true weakness, and they go through all of the necessary things to go and blow up the Death Star, but it doesn't require some super Jedi at the end last minute coming in and saving us in a way that's unexpected.
Yeah, nothing feels like it's out of the blue. And
yeah, from realizing now, we've literally seen one in Star Wars. Plans of Death Star are being transmitted.
That's right.
End of Star Wars. The conclusion of those plans turns into the explosion of the Death Star.
Yes.
Our character and our, you know, all of our themes are handled.
Absolutely. And you know, also the character arc of Luke Skywalker is very much going through this, you know, starting in safety to chaos and back to safety. But the thing that I realized is that it's not good enough to have this protagonist. This protagonist needs to be able to move around a world. You can't have adventures. You can't have things happen to you unless there's some kind of landscape for it to happen within. And that landscape can't be arbitrary either. You know, if you think of what we see in movies or in the theater, you look around yourself. If you're in a desert plain, there might be some mountains in the distance. Those mountains, we know that it makes sense to have mountains like that in that kind of desert plain. And visiting those mountains becomes an option, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're part of the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to return to Star Wars, yes, they're doing super, light speed travel or whatever, but that's been set up as a conceit of the world that you can do that. And so the point is that there's a unified world here. And in the world of Bach, but not just of Bach, I mean, this is true of like all pop music, pretty much all jazz, you know, before, let's say, 1960. This is true of all common practice classical music, including all the romantic composers and all that. The world in which the adventure happens is this very coherent, very hierarchical world of tonal harmony, where every chord has a function and purpose. It's like, I know where I am in the landscape. I can see it. There's a map, and I'm going to go around this landscape, but only within that landscape, not the random places that don't belong in the landscape.
Could you take me through a landscape on a similar theme?
Yeah, like do a free improvisation with the same theme?
Yeah.
I've literally never improvised with this theme. It's crazy. Yeah, I'm going to try improvising with this theme. And I'm just going to start in C major. And so, you know, the first thing that I'll say is that right away, if I'm in C major, I know that I can only modulate to a few keys, right? I can modulate to D minor, modulate to E minor, I can modulate to F major, I can modulate to G major, and I can modulate to A minor. That's it. These are like the mountains around my home key of C.
Yep.
This is an incredibly rich world just because I'm limited to modulating to those six keys, or modulating to those five keys in addition to C major is not in any way limiting. There are so many options.
Which is kind of like saying you're doing a montage of going from like city to mountains to the next, like your character can go very quickly from all these different places because you have all of these worlds available to you. And then other places you might linger for longer or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty. Yeah, you can linger whenever you want. And that's especially because those places that you might arrive at feel warranted.
Great. So let's set the scene, start at act one.
Thank you. All right. So that to me is like we met our character.
Yeah.
And we met our character at home. Like all of that felt like it was in one place, the home key, C major. Okay. But now that I've resolved back to C, I'll feel like, okay, it's time to start act two. And I'll choose a key to modulate to. So you tell me, like, what key would you like me to modulate to?
I feel like in the Bach, he goes to the F at the end. So why don't we go to F at the beginning?
Okay, cool. Okay, so I've just resolved back to C. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to visit chords. Now I'm thinking I'm in F. And what I'm going to do is visit chords that are now diatonic to F, but without resolving too quickly to F.
We're going to be in the key of F when you say diatonic.
Diatonic, like the chords that literally fit in the scale of F major.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you know, I resolved quite cleanly to F. I think by the time we got to F, it really felt like we wanted to go there, right? And as I was mentioning earlier, one of the things I've learned from Bach is that he doesn't linger once he resolves.
Right, and you're not lingering.
It's if
not,
I wanted to linger, I would have lingered before.
Right, right.
Like before resolving to F. Grab onto that tension, you know? Make the monster that our hero has to defeat be more difficult,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
So now I resolve to F, and I want to immediately say, let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so in this case, maybe I'll go to the relative minor of F, which is D minor, which also happens to be one of the related keys to C major.
Okay.
That we can modulate to. Okay. So I've just resolved to F, and then I'm going to start using chords that are part of D minor. So already, I'm starting to go somewhere else.
Yeah, okay. We are thoroughly in the middle of Act Two.
Oh,
yeah. We're going through so many different experiences and changes as our character. And your character is still here.
My character, yeah, it's all on, right? Everything's with the character. And by the way, you know, I'm being very kind of didactic about it right now, keeping the character present all the time. But one of the things I've thought about a lot in storytelling is your character doesn't have to be in the shot all the time. In fact, it's pretty natural for your character not to be in the shot all the time.
Oh my gosh! So you can have you can have B plots and C plots.
You can have B plots. You can have C plots. You can also just have landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the really important thing in a film is you just pan over to the landscape and we're just looking at landscape for a while, right? So that's like something I love to do when I'm free improvising is like letting go of the character entirely.
Mm.
So like suddenly I'm not playing thematically anymore. I might just be like doing what jazz musicians call blowing over the changes. Right, but I'm making up the changes that go along, making up the landscape, right? And so maybe this would be a time to do that. So, you know, what did I do? I just resolved to D minor, right? And so let's choose another key. Like, let's say this would be a pretty intense modulation. Let's say I want to now go to E minor.
Okay,
this is like a real move. And let's say that I want to drop our character for a minute. But like, we've got to D minor, and then I'm just going to drop our character for a minute and choose chords from E minor until it feels like it's time to resolve to that key center. So.
Our character comes back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, felt really natural at that point to resolve to E minor. And the reason for that is that I've only been visiting chords that belong to that place.
As Bach would have prefigured his movement from act to act as well.
Yeah. Exactly. And I felt like it felt good to give our character a break there a little bit, and then bring our character back once we've gone to this new place.
Wonderful. So we need to close out.
How do we need to close out. Like maybe we got enough places, but you know, typically if I were doing this as a free improvisation, I mean, this could go on for a while. This could be like a, you know, 7 or even 10 minute improvisation.
Right.
Because there is so much drama to be found in these movements. You know, I mean, E minor feels so different from D minor. There's just so much exploration that could be done there. But okay, let's say that we've gotten to E minor, and now I feel like it's time to go back home. So what I'm going to do in order to prefigure our return is, for example, introduce the F natural, which over E minor is going to be like amazing. This is like an amazing color. So, you know, like say we're here in E minor, right? Mm-hmm. But then I go.
Ooh, yeah.
So now I'm on the dominant. I could just go, okay? But it feels a little too easy. So I think what I'm going to do now is do something that Bach does sometimes. I'm going to just like create some lingering tension, that idea that we talked about.
It's our final boss.
Final boss, or maybe just a feeling of like, okay, I'm going home, but am I ready to let go of the adventure? You know, that's a big question in storytelling. It's like, this has been a lot of fun, as hard as it's been.
I've been transformed. I don't know if I want to go home.
I don't know if I want to go home, right? So like maybe there's a lingering sense of still wanting to be out there. So maybe I'm going to visit the minor subdominant. Even in C major, the minor subdominant, which is F minor, is very much a part of the landscape. A part of the landscape that has a lot of tension in it.
Okay.
You know, I was just going to G7. With that possibility of resolving straight to C. But instead, resolve to F minor now, but then our F minor, as stable as it might seem, I go. So because I introduced that D there, makes it an F minor 6, which does not feel stable in F at all. Suddenly this tritone here wants to resolve to C minor or even to C major. Okay, so suddenly just that small addition of the D natural completely shifts our center of gravity. Okay, and then the one thing that I want to do now,
you can't leave me hanging like that, man,
is that because the color feels minor now, feels kind of like I want to resolve to C minor, I'm going to question the dominant. I'm on G7 right now, but I'm going to do a dominant of the dominant. I'm going to go to this F sharp, or I'm going to go to the D7 or F sharp diminished. So. Okay, now super open feeling G7 that feels, okay, now this can lead to C major. Okay, I mean, this is just like one of the infinite journeys that I could take, and this is why this is so fun for me, because it's like not just following my nose. I know this is a beautiful landscape.
Yeah,
and all I need to do is move around within this landscape and keep the landscape alive, right? Because I'm creating the landscape as I go, so it's like I'm nurturing the landscape. But as long as I do nurture the landscape correctly, it's a beautiful landscape. You know, it's so pleasurable. I just find so much joy in it.
So you've built this whole new skill of this journey that we can go on in a free improvisation. And your project is, in a certain way, your own interpretation, completing some of what is missing in the Bach.
Yeah, I would never say anything's missing in the Bach. I mean, I think of it more in this way. There's never any need to add anything to Bach. I mean, the work is so masterful and so complete in itself. But really what came about for me is, as we've been discussing, I was so inspired by this idea of narrative storytelling. And I learned to do my own form of free improvisation within that same abstract concept. And then I thought, how about if I played a concert for audiences that made that link explicit? And then I thought to myself, okay, how can I combine these two things? At first I was thinking, okay, I'll play the inventions, and then maybe in the second half I'll ask my audience for themes and I'll do free improvisations in different keys. And then it just dawned on me, wait a minute, you know, Bach left 9 windows open. Hmm. He didn't close it up.
There's only 15 inventions, 15 keys.
Exactly. He only did 15 keys because he didn't want to do the crazier exotic ones. He didn't want
to... Probably does not fitting for a student to go to some of the keys that he chose to avoid.
It's not fitting for a very young student. It's just not worth the trouble. Like, right. let's stick with the most used keys at the time, not the most exotic ones. And so then, yeah, it just was an immediate kind of light bulb. Like, I can play around, have fun in those spaces that he left open.
And so you get to do the keys that have not been explored. And in your improvisation, are you drawing material, some of the characters, are you referencing his characters, or are you building your own characters in those keys?
I'm very much trying to build my own characters. Like, the process for me is, and this is true every time I play a concert, I mean, it's really, really, very important for me. I sit down at the instrument and I just listen inside, and invariably there'll be some melody that comes up if I listen. Never had it happen that it doesn't. I mean, occasionally I might be really nervous and stuff feels like there's nothing there, but all it takes is for me to take a few breaths and some melody arises. And it could be the simplest thing in the world. You know, it could be like, or whatever. It could be anything. It doesn't matter. It could be, I've done entire free improvisations with two notes. It could be like, doo-dee.
Yeah.
That's completely enough for telling a story.
Sure.
You know? So I'll just listen for this fragment of melody, and often it's not just a melody, it's like a vibe, like a rhythmic vibe, something. Mm-hmm. And that becomes my world, and I don't question it. I jump in and develop my character and follow it on a journey.
I want to thank you for sharing the detail and the process that you've gone through to build these compositions, even doing free improv and speaking through it, which is fairly unnatural. The reward is certainly the full work in inventions and reinventions, and really encourage people to go and listen to that. I'll make sure to share it in all of our show notes. Thank you so much for sharing this music with us.
It's been an utter pleasure. And, you know, this is the first time I've ever actually broken these ideas down, and even first time I've ever really explicitly analyzed Bach in this way. So I'm really glad that you wanted to do this, and thanks for all your insights.
It was the best music class I've ever gotten to take, so thank you. All right, before we go, I want to recommend two things. First, go check out all of Dan Tepfer's inventions, reinventions on Story Sound Records. It's on all the major streaming platforms, and I'll obviously post it in our show notes. Secondly, I implore you to go check out the newest episode of the podcast, Intuit, by our friend Sam Sanders at Vulture. They're doing a piece about fair use. It's kind of related to a lot of the story we've been talking about, vibe snatching and interpolations. Right now, at the heart of two big intellectual property disputes are three titans of pop culture, the Black Eyed Peas, Andy Warhol, and Prince. Both cases have huge implications when it comes to what constitutes fair use of another artist's work. Sam Sanders talks with Slate's Supreme Court reporter Mark Joseph Stern about why the Black Eyed Peas are going after a toy company's dancing unicorn commercial, and why Andy Warhol's silkscreen of a Prince photograph has made its way to the Supreme Court. Go check it out on Intuit. Again, we'll post it in the show notes. That's on our website as well at switchedonpop.com, and we'll post it on social at SwitchedOnPop on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Switched On Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, edited by Art Chung, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, community management by Abby Barr, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb. Our executive producers are Hannah Rosen and Ashok Kerwa. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture. We'll be back on Tuesday when we take the story from Bach to Shakira. And until then, thanks for listening.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.